Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if we could have your attention, we'll start the formalities and then we can, of course, continue to enjoy the wonderful hospitality of our sponsors here tonight, Telstra, for the great job they're doing here in supporting the Parliamentary Friendship Group for the LGBTI. And it's the first one of its kind in Australia, so we're very proud of that. I can also, I think we have quite a significant number of senators here tonight and members. Some will be coming backwards and forwards as is required of them. I see, I think Senator Wong was here a moment ago.
Was,
yeah. She was, and I thank her for that. But there's a number of senators here, and I thank you very much. I see Bill Heffernan here, and a great supporter of our course. Thank you very much for being here. But there are a number that you will meet here tonight, and I thank you very much. I see Malcolm Turnbull just turned up too. Thank you, indeed, Malcolm, for being here. And to all of my parliamentary colleagues, for taking the time to be here. As the chair of the Parliamentary Friendship Group for the LGBTI community, I am certainly honoured to be here today, and I have to admit I'm quite emotional standing here tonight. There's no doubt what we're doing here this evening is something of a milestone. It was in July last year that my colleagues Graham Perrott and Sarah Hanson-Young came together to establish the Parliamentary Friendship Group, and we recognised very much that there was a marked divide between policymakers and the LGBTI community. This is a community that faces a huge range of challenges in today's society, from getting appropriate identity documents to battling government systems which don't correctly identify a person's gender, to looking at aged care, estate planning, retirement issues, bullying, and of course, and extensive health issues as well. We hope that by giving the LGBTI Australians the opportunity to interact socially with members and senators in the Australian Parliament, they'd be able to raise many of these issues and build awareness and understanding through simple conversations. And I hope that we're able to achieve that through this forum. We also wanted to create opportunities for those for these to be discussed and, of course, addressed in the legislative level. Our inaugural function was held, I think, in September last year. Sarah,
it was.
When Olympic gold medalist and Telstra sporting ambassador Matthew Mitchum gave a keynote speak and did a fantastic job. And you touched on many of the challenges that affect the LGBTI Australians. It was also wonderful. It's also wonderful to have Paul Gleeson here at that event too, representing our key sponsor, Telstra. And I've got to say, this has been fantastic. We contacted Telstra Paul last year when we had our inaugural function, and he didn't hesitate to step up and Telstra sponsored it. We organised this one. Of course, Telstra again has been our sponsor here, and I thank you very much indeed, Paul and Telstra, for your commitment in this area. Thank you very much indeed. Paul, at the time, was able to raise issues that many parliamentarians would not have been aware of, including workplace support for intersex and transgender employees at the time. Taken us a little while to get this second event underway, as we and part of the reason for that is that we wanted to focus tonight on transgender and intersex issues, and we'd actually booked a time here a little bit earlier, but unfortunately it clashed with the marriage debate. And we just didn't want the marriage debate to overlap onto the good work that's been done through Peter Handel and the A Agenda Group in raising issues specific to the transgender community. And and so it has taken a little while, but we thought it was important that we make sure that we keep the two separate. and particularly in the transgender. It's an area that's not spoken about publicly very often. People tend to shy away from it. I actually used the opportunity of the marriage debate to say, well, I'm not getting involved in the marriage debate, but let's talk about transgender and intersex issues. And it's given us an opportunity, and my co-chairs in this have been great in helping to raise the awareness and start that discussion. I think that's very, very important, and we'll continue to do that. So tonight we're launching that report that has been put together. We now not only have the opportunity to potentially to shape our future policy, but we can certainly make a real tangible difference in the lives of many thousands of people within the transgender, intersex and sex and gender diverse community. We do have some apologies tonight from representatives from the intersex community, Tony Brefra and Phoebe Hart, were unable to attend, but they wanted to express their appreciation to the National LGBTI Health Alliance for coordinating this report, along with the support of this parliamentary friendship group. I know that coverage of LGBTI issues in the media is often sidelined by other issues, but this community does face a raft of discriminatory issues every day because of laws that were never designed to take into account the needs of this community. This report, I believe, will give us a real opportunity to prioritise and to address a number of these serious issues that have impacted on a large sector of the Australian society. And I know, and I just want you to know that we certainly are listening. We're here in a tripartisan way. We're looking at ways in which we can, between Graham, of course, Sarah and myself, looking at ways that we can advance these things in a tripartisan way to get some solutions to this. And we're certainly committed to making things just a little bit easier for you whenever we can. So thank you very much indeed for your attendance here tonight. Thank you. Now I'd like, if I could, to introduce Sarah Hanson-Young, a Senator for the Greens, and Sarah will introduce Peter Hendel. Thank you.
It's lovely to see that our first event last year wasn't our only one. So it's great to see Warren and Graham as committed to this as they were 12 months ago, and the group, I think, is continuing to grow. I hope after the election that whoever new members of parliament we have will feel like this is a worthwhile group, that we can continue it on throughout the years to come as well. My job tonight is to introduce Peter Hendel, who is from Agenda Agenda, but also from the National LGBTI Health Alliance. And these little booklets are on the table as you walk in. If you haven't grabbed one yet, make sure you grab one before you go. It is a report that was conducted after the LGBTI conference in Sydney. It talks about a lot of the different health issues that as parliamentarians we really need to take seriously, that if we are genuine and fair dinkum about making sure we can ensure proper diversity in our healthcare systems, if we want to overcome the various types of almost institutionalised discrimination in some respects, we have to tackle some of the recommendations, if not all of the recommendations, in this report. One of the things that strikes me, we stand here tonight, and this is an amazing opportunity to have people from all over representing great diversity in our nation's capital, is the fact that obviously last week in Uganda, a bill was tabled in the Ugandan parliament to criminalise homosexual activity and to make put in place prison sentences for people. Now, when you reflect on the rights and human rights of people with a variety of diverse backgrounds, gender, of course, being one of them, sexuality, you've got to think, we actually have it pretty good here. But we only have it this good here because individuals have come and fought for it and been willing and courageous enough to speak out against the continued discrimination and pushing for positive change, social inclusion, and of course a basic compassion and understanding. Our job hasn't finished, and this report says that we as policymakers have a long, long way to go. And Peter is going to speak a little bit more to that, but I think understanding the next steps and challenges as parliamentarians, it's all very easy to get, particularly ahead of an election year, get stuck in the trenches and not actually think too closely about the real issues that face people on a very day-to-day basis, simply because they are who they are. And I think we all need to reflect on the recommendations in the report. So, Peter, welcome. Thank you for being here. And I hope that we can get some movement on the recommendations from the group. Thank you very much.
Okay. I wanted to start by just talking about this word that we've heard a few times tonight, or the phrase sex and gender diversity. Because it's a word that gets talked about more and more these days, but I think, in actual fact, if we're honest, probably very few of us really understand what that means. So sex and gender diversity is a term that describes two different groups of people. The first are intersex. Being intersex means that you're born with biological characteristics that are either not completely female, not completely male, or perhaps a mix of both male and female. And when I say biological characteristics, I mean things like chromosomes, hormones, genitals, and reproductive organs. Being intersex is a naturally occurring biological reality. It has nothing to do with a person's gender identity, and it has absolutely nothing to do with a person's sexuality. The second group of people that we mean when we use that term sex and gender diversity are people whose gender identity happens to be different from cultural assumptions of what it should be. This includes, but it certainly isn't limited, to people like me, who was born female, but who identifies as a man and who presents as a man. My identity as a man is real. For me, it has absolutely nothing to do with my biological makeup, and it has absolutely nothing to do with my sexuality. Okay, that's enough of the lecture at the start. But I think it is actually important ground to cover, because I think often when we talk about these kind of issues, we forget that very basic starting point about making sure that everyone actually understands what we are talking about. I'm really proud that we're launching this report this evening. Many people have been aware for a really long time that there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done at a Commonwealth level in relation to trans and intersex issues. As Sarah alluded to, in June of this year, the National LGBTI Health Alliance held a two-day national roundtable to discuss these issues. We had, off the top of my head, I think 17 people representing a range of different organisations coming from a range of geographical areas around the country. And to the best of our knowledge, it's the first time ever that a group of sex and gender diverse people have met in a meeting like that to discuss those issues in this country. The thing that struck me most from those 2 days was how easy it was for us to actually reach consensus. All of the people sitting around that table knew what the issues were, and all of the people around that table knew what needed to be done to solve them. I'm going to just go through the top five priority areas that were identified in the report, and they're not in any particular order. So the first one I'll cover is the need to remove the sex tagging of Medicare and the pharmaceutical benefit scheme items. At the moment, trans and intersex people are not entitled to coverage for procedures or prescriptions that are medically required for them in the same way that other people in this country are. The second priority area is about ensuring that the Australian Bureau of Statistics starts to record data, population data, about sex and gender diverse people. So at the moment, the ABS doesn't collect that data, and in fact, if they're presented with someone who actually says, I'm trans or I'm intersex, they randomly allocate a sex to that person. So anecdotally, we know that sex and gender diverse people experience far poorer general health and well-being outcomes and far poorer mental health outcomes than the general population. So, for example, the National LGBTI Health Alliance says that 50% of trans people had attempted suicide at least once. And the TransNation report, which was released, I think, in 2007, said that 36% of trans people at the time of the survey met the criteria for being currently clinically depressed. Those are statistics you just don't see in the general population. But because policymakers and researchers and funders rely so heavily on ABS data to determine need and priority, we, as a population group, become completely invisible, which means that there are no programs in this country that specifically target trans and intersex population groups. The third top recommendation was about ensuring consistency in the way the Commonwealth departments collect, change and use information about our sex and gender. At the moment there is no consistency, which means one government department can treat me as being male at exactly the same time as another government department can treat me as being female. We had passport reforms back in 2011, which provide a really nice model that just should be adopted consistently across government departments. The fourth is about regulating surgery on intersex children and infants, and also about allowing gender questioning adolescents access to hormones, prescription hormones. So despite the long history of unnecessary surgical intervention on intersex infants and children, which has been performed without their consent and has been proven to be ineffective and highly damaging to many individuals, there are still no agreed guidelines to regulate this practice in our country. We contrast that with the situation for a gender-questioning adolescent who wants to postpone puberty in order to work through gender issues that they have. Even with their consent and the support of both their parents and the recommendation of multiple medical specialists, puberty blockers, those hormones to delay puberty, cannot be prescribed without a costly and timely and completely unnecessary family court case. So both those situations need to be addressed. The last of the key recommendations related to Commonwealth discrimination protection on the basis of gender identity and of intersex status. 90% of sex and gender diverse people experience discrimination, not just in the workplace, but in every area of their lives. 37% of sex and gender diverse people experience that discrimination on at least a weekly basis. The Consolidated Discrimination Act was meant to address these issues, but the definition of gender identity that has appeared in the current exposure draft is completely inadequate in offering protection for trans and more particularly for intersex people. So I reckon this should be a bit of a simple fix. Because with tripartisan support and a better definition that's already been drafted in Tasmania, surely we can manage quickly on this one. This report isn't intended to be like completely comprehensive, but I think it does provide a really good starting point for some serious and some very worthwhile and meaningful work to be done. Work that is going to very, very quickly make a fundamental difference to the lives of many, many Australians. A lot of people seem to assume that law reform around trans and intersex issues is just going to be really, really contentious. And I want to challenge that assumption, because in our experience over the last 10 years, it actually isn't anywhere near as contentious as a lot of people assume it's going to be. And it's not contentious because it's based on really basic human rights principles. So although there's a whole lot of recommendations in this report, I can condense all of them down into three very simple principles that underpin all of them. The first is that we need to acknowledge the reality of our bodies, of people's bodies. The second is that we need to acknowledge the reality of people's identities. And the third is that we need to acknowledge the autonomy that every individual is entitled to have over both those things.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter, and very, very sobering thoughts. And thank you for sharing that with us. And congratulations on this. This is a very significant step forward. I know when I first spoke to Peter about putting this together, it was a couple of years ago, and I said to Peter, you know, there are many in this room that are living the challenges of this every day. But there are a lot greater number of us that really have no idea at all of the challenges that are being faced by those of you that have are gender diverse. And I said to Peter, what we need to do is we need to get together something that we can all understand and that we can, as a group, start to move and focus on and start to deal with. And this is the reason why we have Graham and we have Sarah and myself here to try and deal with this, because a lot of these things, a lot of these challenges that we have no idea on. But thank you for that. And you have produced, in my view, as I said to you, it's quite emotional because it is a very, very good document. It's a good starting point. It's certainly not the end of the road, but it's a certainly good starting point. What I'd like to do now is I'd ask Graham if he'd like to, what is that? Is that, what colour? That's Senate.
Going back to work.
Going back to work. Thank you, Bill. Only back to work, so nobody has to move. But I'd like to ask Graham Parrott, of course. Graham also, with Sarah and myself, were involved in establishing this this friendship group, and Sarah said we hope it continues. We've got a tripartisan support here. Let me assure you, irrespective of who's in government at the next election, this friendship group will continue, and we will continue to pursue these issues, and we will make sure that we start to get some of these things addressed. Now ask Graham to come forward, my friend Graham to come forward, and Graham Parrott will introduce our guest speaker. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thanks, Warren. Could I also acknowledge the traditional owners and thank them for their continuing stewardship. To my co-conveners, Warren and Sarah, all the MPs and senators, and three people in particular, Kelly, Kate and Brett, from our offices, who actually do all the work about making tonight occur. To all the guests, and as I'm in a marginal seat, anyone that lives in my electorate, and even more importantly, the people that actually put their money where our mouths are, which is Telstra, the sponsors, and I think we need to give them a special acknowledgement. Now, I've had a reasonably busy week, last week in Parliament, and so I only found out today that what my job was, which is to introduce Paige Phoenix, who, as I found out tonight, is a star of a very popular music show. Now, sadly, the last TV show I watched with music in it, I think, was Countdown. So I was at a bit of a disadvantage. So I grabbed Paige and took him up the back of the room and found out a little bit more about himself. And the more I found out, the more I didn't like this guy. Not only can he sing, he's a psycho. I mean, sing like nobody's business, obviously, to make the top five in X Factor. He's got a book deal, and as an author, I can tell you that's particularly galling. And also has his own psychotherapist, his own practice in Melbourne. But obviously, coming out as the first transgender person in the world on live TV is a CV that not many people will have. Not many people will have. But more importantly, not only singing like nobody's business, but able to change lives both in his day job and his night job and everything in between. Very impressive. And I hear from Paige that he has nothing but positive feedback since appearing on national TV and was recently married to Sarah. Not our Sarah. That I know of.
Although I am available.
Well, he said it was Sarah. I assumed it wasn't Sarah Hanson Young, but we'll sort that out later. Ladies and gentlemen, please make welcome Paige Phoenix.
Wow, okay. I'm blushing a little more than I expected to be standing up here.
Don't worry, we'll get it sorted out.
Yeah, I mentioned this to my new wife. Okay, so good evening everyone. I'm Paige Phoenix. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and speak at this prestigious occasion. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional elders and owners of Australia. I'd like to pay respect to Aboriginal elders of past, present and future generations. I'd also like to thank the Members of Parliament, the Honourable Warren Ench, Graham Perrett and Senator Sarah Hanson for providing me with the invitation to come and speak with you tonight. I'd like to congratulate the parliamentary friends of LGBTI Australians and of course the National LGBTI Health Alliance for their tremendous achievement in getting this this report up and tabled. Do you guys mind if I use like the SGD abbreviation instead of sex and gender diverse the whole way through? It has a lot less syllables and it's a bit easier for me, if that's okay. I may interchange, but yeah, if I say SGD, that's I'm saying sex and gender diverse. So, as you all know, this report was developed during the roundtable discussions of a very high calibre group of individuals. All of whom are very well posited to speak about the issues that are impacting SGD people in their communities. I thank you. Wow, I'm doing my head.
Yeah, try working here.
I am not the most qualified person in this room to speak about the contents of this report, and as such, feel a little bit overwhelmed standing here. I'm a muso. But what I can speak to you about is my experience of having come out as a trans person on national television, and I can speak to you about the perspectives that were reflected back to me as a result of having become a point of contact for SGD people in Australia in particular, but also right across the world, and a lot of our issues are parallel to other places as well. I have sung as long as I can remember. It's always been my single greatest love, and I always dreamed of a day when I might be able to get up and perform on a big stage in front of a massive adoring crowd with a big band behind me. I never really understood why this thing that I most loved to do was something that I was unable to step into in my life. I would sing for friends, I would sing for family, I would sing shamelessly in supermarket aisles and elevators. And yet I just couldn't seem to find the missing link that was preventing me from stepping in. There was a not rightness in myself. Something just didn't feel right in me. And I didn't know what that was for a long time. For the most part, I just brought it down to low self-esteem. I had had a pretty rough upbringing as a kid. I was separated from my family at a really young age. Facing the biggest dream that I had and the idea of either realising that or not realising it, it seemed kind of like it made sense that I would feel sort of fear and have trouble stepping in there. And it wasn't until my early 30s that I realised that the core issue that was holding me back in my life was my gender. I think that every person has a different experience when they're tackling difference in themselves. I didn't know that transgender people existed. I didn't know what trans was. I didn't know any trans people. I had no frame of reference for it whatsoever. I knew that I was different. I knew that I had a history of being rejected by people that I loved, because it seemed to me in my analysis that there was something about me that was unacceptable or unlovable. The day that I realised that it was a mismatch between my assigned gender and my experience of myself was the day that I actually got the possibility of living my life fully. Suddenly it seemed to me that I had the key. I had the potential to become the person that I knew that I was and that I knew that I was meant to be. And it also raised a whole lot of uncertainties for me. Like, how would I get a job? How would I find a partner? How would I live as a non-normatively bodied man in our society? How would I manage, given that I was living in a place in the world where I couldn't afford or access all of the surgeries that I might want? I knew that I would feel right internally, but the logistics of actually interfacing with my world were completely terrifying to me. And then there were the risks associated with the impacts of hormonal transition on my singing voice. I was going to go through a complete radical change in terms of what my voice sounded like and what it would do, and I had no idea if that was going to impact it positively or negatively. And the possibility was that I could have lost my singing voice altogether. It could have just gone. So I agonised about it for months, and then I finally realised that it was actually choiceless. Once I had realised who I was and who I was meant to be, there was nothing that I wasn't willing to risk in order to pursue that. And all of those years of my lost potential drove me forward in terms of wanting to actually become who I am. The first few months were really hard. My body shifted and changed in ways that I couldn't have even conceived possible before I started to transition hormonally. I was accessing all of the services that were available to me, and yet I frequently felt like I was unmet. Like the people that I was dealing with didn't actually understand or have the skills to be able to deal with what I was going through. I was back in this pubescent hell, 30, one, acne and, all of that, raging hormones and temper tantrums and, it was a complete handful for the people around me at the time, and thank God they stuck through it with me. Ate like a horse, battled another abandonment of my immediate family. After having reconciled with them years earlier, they decided that they couldn't go through this part of my journey with me. My vocal cords lengthened, the folds expanded, I required more air to go over those folds to make sound, and I was sore and I was scared. And I sounded awful. You ever listen to a 14-year-old boy trying to sing? You go to make one noise and it comes out being altogether different. But I would not let go of my determination to hang on to the thing that gave me the most meaning in my life. Blessedly, in time it settled. The hardest part was actually the mental shift. It was kind of like learning how to drive a car on the wrong side of the road. I had to relax into something that was totally familiar to me, but doing it in a completely different way. And in time it came. Thank God. And one day, I felt like I was ready to re-emerge. The opportunity to compete in the X Factor competition was a little bit of a no-brainer. At my age, the vehicle of a reality TV show provided me with the potentiality to bust into a music career at a time when, you really need to be at it from sort of, 21, 22. By the time you're in your 30s, people kind of go, you're not a viable investment. So I started researching reality TVs and TV shows, and I worked out that there actually hadn't been a transgendered person who had come out and performed as an out trans person as a contestant on a show of its kind. I don't know that I ever actually really thought seriously about not being an out trans person on the show. It wasn't really a question for me because I was just being myself. So in that way, it was pretty unremarkable. I'd always passionately defended my right to be myself, and in all stages leading up to live shows, I'd just done that. I was just me. But the closer that it came to live TV, the scarier that it got. I had absolutely no idea what the response was going to be. It could have resulted in a catapult to fame. It could have resulted in rocks being catapulted through my windows. I just had no idea at all. I will never forget that moment on stage, right before I actually said that I was trans. It was about 3 seconds, but it was the longest 3 seconds of my life. And I remember Ronan Keating saying to me, "Why have you waited so long?" And it just kind of, everything tunnels out and you're kind of like, "What?" And I said, largely I've waited because of gender transition. I'm a female to male transsexual. And the celebrity panel feigned shock. They knew, of course. And then to my amazement and delight, the whole auditorium of 6,000 people just erupted into applause, standing ovation. I hadn't even sung yet. And then the panel was like, "All right, well, don't think you're getting in on a minority vote. What can you do?" And so I got up and did my thing. But it taught me something about what is amazing and awesome about Australians. Acceptance and authenticity and giving someone a fair go is so core to our cultural ideology that even though this was something that was so way outside of the box for these people and something that made up 3/4 of the audience didn't even know what I was talking about, what they understood was that they were seeing someone who was different, who was willing to take a risk and who was chasing a dream. And pretty much most Australians that you would talk to will get behind that. Obviously, it's a lot more complex than that. Had it been a trans person who was standing there who didn't so neatly fit into the concepts of what's normal, masculine and feminine, it might not have gone that way. If it had been a trans person from a culturally or linguistically diverse background, I don't know how it would have panned out that time or not. But I felt as though this entry level to gender diversity, it had to be worth something. And it was in the coming weeks, when the show was airing, that I was to understand what that actually meant. I did it for two reasons. Firstly, it was about pursuing my music career. But secondly, it was a conscientious decision to try and raise the profile of gender diversity in Australia. There was a lot of anxiety for me in the time between the recording and the airing of the show. It's a very surreal period where it's like something really massive's happened, but kind of nothing's happened because it hasn't actually hit the floor yet. Unfortunately, I didn't make it through the live shows, but I did get through to the top five for the under 25s category, so I was pretty happy with that outcome. But it had gone well with the studio audience, but I still didn't know how it was going to go over in the public. I had to wait and see how the producers were going to portray my story, how they would actually construct it and put it together, and to see how the public was going to respond to it. There isn't an unhappy ending to this story. Whilst it was necessary to prepare for the worst actually never came for me. I was embraced and accepted in ways that I could never have even conceived as possible. Every time I thought things were about to go pear-shaped, I was met with the same beautiful Aussie attitude of, good on you, mate. That took some balls. Ironically enough. Can I say balls in Parliament?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's parliamentary
to me. Well, so I hope I haven't bored you too much with the anecdotal stuff, but it's a really important preface to the next part of the story, which is by far the most meaningful for me, and it's actually come to eclipse the reason that I appeared on the show in the first place. In the weeks while the show was airing, I was flooded with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages from SNGD people all over the world. Yeah. And they weren't just the, like, good on you, love your work kind of messages. They were really deeply personal accounts from SNGD parents of, sorry, from parents of SNGD kids, people that had lost sex and gender diverse people from their lives, people that had partially gone through transition and been hiding in their bedrooms for years. Really curious people, lots and lots of curious people who were just really willing to show up and ask questions and were like, I don't know what this is, but can you explain it to me? Sometimes it was closure that they took from it, and sometimes it was information, but mostly I think it was hope that people took. It was hope in the possibility that even after going through the pain and the trauma and the injustices and the fear and the discrimination that people were going through in their daily lives, that it was actually possible to come out, be yourself, and pursue a dream and have it realised in some way. So I got a lot of information. I got information and insight into the experiences of SNGD people in Australia, some of which I've experienced myself, many of them, and lots that I hadn't and hadn't even considered. It's information that is essential to understanding, and it is understanding that is critical to success. The Australian public demonstrated a willingness to explore something completely new through the X Factor, with an openness and understanding of what's, which I believe is demonstrative of what's possible here. I quote from the report here: transgender, intersex and other diverse sex and gender people have the same rights with regard to the delivery of health and social services as all Australians. This is true, but it's not happening yet. We're at risk. Their legal rights and services that are already being afforded to other members of the community. The structures may need to be amended a little in order to accommodate sex and gender diverse people. But it requires just a basic willingness to meet people in their experience, to collect accurate information and to implement the systemic change that will enable SNGD people to live as healthy, equal and fully functioning members of Australian society. My life has become largely about trying to work to do what I can with the information that I've been given. I met a family on Sunday who have just endured over a year of court battles at a personal cost of $20,000 to secure the right to access appropriate and necessary medical interventions for their daughter. I speak daily to folks who cannot get their sex marker on their birth certificates amended because the surgeries required by the state are either unaffordable or inappropriate for them. We are still scrambling for resources to educate people working with SNGD people and for centres to provide assistance to these people themselves. Folks in the Northern Territory, Tasmania and Perth can't even get access to medical services for transition period. And the gaps in equity and understanding continue to contribute to a society in which SNGD people feel missed and misunderstood. While I was writing this, I was talking to a 21-year-old trans guy on Facebook who had decided to end his life before his 21st birthday, and the only way that he is hanging on is by cutting himself daily. And he's still not sure why he's here. And I've been trying to convince him that things are going to get better, that it's going to get better. This report lays the framework for the way forward. We can no longer say that we didn't know. We can no longer say that we didn't have the information. I have every faith in the Health and Diversity Report and that it will be used positively to begin to address the high levels of stigma, violence, discrimination and prejudice currently being experienced by SNGD people in Australia. And I look forward to a day when more people from my community are able to relay an experience that's been as positive as my own. I sing a lot now. I sing and I sing and I sing, still in supermarket aisles and elevators, and sometimes on the big stage. This life is way too precious to go half-lived. Thank you for your time.
Nobody in this room that couldn't be touched by what Paige had to say. And it really drives us to make sure that we address many of these challenges. Unnecessary challenges that Paige, many like Paige, have to face in their lives. Thank you very much indeed, Paige. It's been a wonderful insight and I appreciate the fact that you're prepared to stand up here and share your life's experiences. Thank you very much indeed. Paige, of course, came out on national TV and it was a huge response, and I hope it was a positive one, and I think you said that it was a positive one. And that's great, but there are many, many people that are facing the same challenges that don't have the opportunity to go out on national TV. You know, they are different. They are willing to take a risk and they're trying to follow a dream. In my office a couple of months ago, I was asked, I had that somebody wanted to come and talk to me about a comment that I'd made in relation to, in my view, some very inappropriate responses by Australian Christian Lobby, and I'd made some comments, and I was asked to do an interview. And a gentleman by the name of Colin Duck turned up to do an interview. And we sat down and we talked, and he asked me why I responded in the way that I did. By the time we'd finished that interview, Colin told me that he was really Kate. And that he was, and he told me his story, or her story, how she was trying to transition and the challenges that she'd had within her own family and what have you. And Kate's here tonight. Kate's still a journo, nice to see you here, Kate. At the end of it, we went to shake my hand, I gave him a hug and I said, you know, really, more power to you, you've got to make this work. And it's great to see you here, Kate, it really is, because it's been a difficult... Kate's faced the challenges, but I think you're going to get there, Kate. I really think you're going to get there. And I'm hoping that the work that's been done through A Agenda will make sure that that makes that transition just a little bit easier. I'd now like to take the opportunity. I mean, these things don't happen by accident. As was said earlier by Graham, Kelly and Kate and Brett from each of our offices, from Sarah's, from Brett's, from my office and from Graham's office. We've also got Melissa here. We've got Natasha here from her, and of course Heather that have been here taking I brought them all the way from Cairns to be here to make sure that they are here to make sure that this worked very well. But of course what we're doing is we're enjoying the hospitality of one of our iconic organisations, one of our communication companies, Telstra. And I'd now like to introduce another one of our guest speakers tonight, Mr. Paul Geeson, with a very, very big thank you for you, Paul, for your support, your outstanding support, not for one, but for two sponsorships that you've had on tonight's event, you know, because you were the inaugural sponsor. Paul is the Group Managing Director of Telstra Enterprise and Government and is responsible for relations around 1,500 of Australia's largest businesses, enterprises and government customers. Paul is also Telstra's Executive Sponsor for the LGBTI Inclusion and their Diversity Council. So I'm sure he's got some very, very interesting perspectives that he'd like to share with us tonight. So if I could please, I'd like to welcome Paul Geeson. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Warren. I guess a quick word from the sponsor, so to speak. Look, Telstra and our role in diversity, and in particular for me, I've been the executive sponsor in the company for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex within our diversity council for I think 3 years now. Very ably supported all that while by Troy Roderick, who is here tonight, who leads our diversity focus and initiative in Telstra. And I must say that...
Always with a smile.
Always with a smile. An outstanding individual who... is a great source of energy, ideas and inspiration for all of us who are really trying to change the way organisations think about this responsibility. When I listen to Paige, I think the reflection that I have on why this is so important to Telstra is that we know that there is just so much talent in this country and we don't get any opportunity to shape or design in what package that talent comes. But we know we want it in our organisations doing great things and providing wonderful opportunities for them to be successful, for them to grow, for them to learn and to realise all of their aspiration. Now, we're not about to form a music group or otherwise in Telstra Page, but certainly I think it is a great source of inspiration that for the leadership of our company, and when you think about the role that large organisations have across the corporate and government landscape in Australia, we really need to be able to create an environment that embraces talent and provides an inclusive and open workplace. And that's why I love doing what I do here. And there's lots of other things that always get in the way of the things that we prioritise. But for me, you know, again, I come away from hearing your story, Paige, with a whole new sense of renewed enthusiasm for knowing that, you know, what we're doing in the workplace is right. So I really do appreciate that. For us in Telstra, one of the really neat things we did, which was a little bit of a gift to me and my focus in GLBTI, was we changed the brand. Do you love this brand? I mean, how about these colours, right? I think this just sort of looks really nice for us. It's pink and green, we've got all the colours of the rainbow, and it's really fantastic. I think for us, our focus on GLBTI is it's really important. I think probably our preeminent focus is around our spectrum network, and that's a network whereby people can nominate into this network. It's an environment where they become very collegial, where there is mentoring and coaching support. We've now got just nearly 400 members in our spectrum network who have identified as GLBTI. And what's really neat is it's growing. And what I like about the fact that it's growing is that it means that the new people that are coming into our organisation are actually feeling a sense of being welcomed and a sense of fairness and a sense of belonging from the moment that they actually start in the organisation. And that's really important to us. That network continues to grow. We're now extending it this year to all people in Telstra because we actually think that there's an enormous desire for allies and for people to come out in support of our GLBTI community, and we think that's a really important next step for us. We do lots of things around the community. We love participating in Midsummer. It was very interesting. I was just remarking to Graham last week, we launched Midsummer Festival in Melbourne. If any of you know Midsummer Festival, 25 years I think is it's been running now. It's a wonderful, wonderful event celebrating queer and entertainment and what have you, and it's just brilliant. We're now involved in our third year. We launched it, and what I was really delighted about was National Australia Bank and IBM were actually right there with us. So, you know, we are starting to see this focus on creating the workplace as a very open and inclusive environment is you know, really becoming important.
Maybe you can get Midsummer to pay us next year, then.
To pay you? Well, we can talk. We can talk. We might get you... Well, actually, there could be a role there. We'll grab that card afterwards. But look, for us as an organisation, one of the things I do want to share, it's quite important, is that we as an organisation are trying to change our company forever. I think Telstra for too long has been considered an organisation that does not delight its customers and create service experiences and a perspective of Telstra the type that we would like. And for that's right. And so if you speak to David Thodey, he'll tell you we are going to change this organisation forever, and I'm completely on board. And part of that is cultural change. And for us, when we think about cultural change and change in mindset of our people, individuals become really important. We're a terribly bureaucratic, process-driven organisation which results in bad outcomes. But where we want to get to is delighting our customers. And to do that, it's very much about the mindset of our people. And for us, that mindset that we talk to our people about right now is doing the right thing for customers and treating customers and treating each other in the way that you would like to be treated. And at the core of that mindset change is ensuring that our people know that in the workplace they can be themselves and that they see other people as individuals. And I think that those messages in any organisation, whether it be corporate or government, as a principle by which you open up the workplace and you create an inclusive workplace, is just really, you know, absolutely fundamental to the sort of organisation that we want to stand for and the sort of workplace that we want to be proud of. So we don't have all the answers. We don't even know where all the problems are yet or the challenges lie, but as an organisation, we're absolutely committed to an open and inclusive workplace. And I really do want to commend Graham and Warren and Sarah on what is a bipartisan approach here on an issue.
Tripartisan.
I'm sorry. Indeed. Because you do need allies. You know, the same as I've described our corporate relationships with other large organisations, I think seeing this focus in the federal parliament is really important for us. And we certainly share an aspiration for making Australia an even more tolerant place and an even better place for people to work and live. So, look, I thank you for the opportunity to share some of those thoughts with you tonight. I think this is a wonderful event. We've signed up for a third year, I think, if you're willing to go. And please, from here, relax and enjoy the evening, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Paul, thank you very much indeed. In fact, I was just talking to Sarah and Graham and we were saying how good it is. I mean, Telstra, we've got a trifecta here. We're going to be doing another function next year. Telstra will be supporting and sponsoring that function. And I think that says a hell of a lot for the organisation, says a hell of a lot for you, Paul.
and your commitment to do it. But the other thing too, we're just talking between the three of us. It's very, very rare that you get a genuine trifecta arrangement between in this parliament. I mean, there's a lot. It's very adversarial. And Graham says to me that probably the only other one that we can think of is Red Cross. But you know, there is a genuine affection. There is a genuine consensus between the three of us to make sure that what happens here, how we advance this, how we make this happen, we do it together as a group. And you know, that is quite unique in itself, and we're very proud that we've been able to do that. And I think the other thing I say to thank you, each and every one of you, for taking the time to be here. This is a parliament for all Australians, irrespective of your politics, irrespective of your religion, and quite frankly, irrespective of the diversity of your gender.
Or age.
But don't push it home. But thank you very much indeed for taking the time to be here this evening. And thank you also to A Agenda, to Peter Hendel, for the outstanding effort that they put in making this happen. Now for the three of us representing our diverse political interests to make sure that a lot of what is in here starts to get incorporated into Australian law, so that we don't see that discrimination, that we don't see that segregation, and we don't see people having to feel at the age of 21 that they have to cut themselves and suicide because they're not accepted in our society. And can I just say thank you very much, Paige, for your experience. And can I also, Colin, where's Colin? He's still Kate, sorry. Kate came in as Colin came in as Colin, went out as Kate. Kate, thank you very much for being here tonight as well. It's very, very special, and I certainly look forward to a long friendship with you as we see you in your life's journey. Thank you very much, everybody, for being here.